Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, the program that's devoted to those of you who are aware that all of the world's religious, political, military, and economic schemes, as well as the media and most of academia, are corrupt and counterproductive, working against your interests, and that none of them can be resolved. It is impossible to save a religious institution, to redeem one, to make one worthwhile. They're all rotten to the core, as is every military, as is every political institution the world over, and that would include yours. If you're open to that realization, great. Yeah, this program is for you. If you're not, just go away and wave your flag someplace. Remember, however, that we warned you that within the next 15 years, life as you know it will no longer exist. Your government, your military, your judicial system, your economic system will all betray you. And you will have no one to blame but yourself for the situation, the plight that you find yourself in, which will be anarchy and absolute subjugation. You will lose all freedoms. You will lose your entire net worth, all that you have worked for. Life will be chaos. And it will be chaos because the vast preponderance of people have chosen to reject the only square deal in town, the only honest and reliable offer. And they have substituted with all manner of human alternatives, all under the names of various political, economic, military, and religious schemes. Yesterday, I was reading the Washington Post, and a front-page story appeared in the Washington Post. May have been the day before yesterday. I've just saved it here. That is extraordinarily revealing in the context of the one individual whose proposal you can trust. Scott, what do you think you can get these days for $46 billion?
Oh, man. What could I get?
What do you think a country might be able to buy for $46 billion? That'd be a tough guess. Yeah, let me help you a bit. The opportunity to participate in Armageddon.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I'm, with numbers that big, I'm at a loss because
$46 billion is what the Chinese government is investing in a roadway between Western China and through Pakistan to the Gulf of Arabia. That's what they're investing. Now, why would I say that that is an interesting... They're building a road. Oh, no, they're not buying it. They're building. It's going to cost them $46 billion to build a road.
You know, I'll do it for half that.
Okay. Christian eschatologists have long realized that one of the players in Armageddon... Well, they don't seem to understand that the Magog War, which is World War III, is all Islamic. They recognize that one of the players in Armageddon, World War IV, is in all likelihood China, because this foe marches 200 million men across the Euphrates River. Well, there was a problem with it being China that the eschatologists never bothered to consider. Well, it was actually two. A, while American Christians have been indoctrinated to think that China is a boogeyman because their government is communist, they have not dealt with the reality that the economy, the economics of China are now capitalist. They are free enterprise, and therefore the government of China is not going to do anything that is contrary to what is the fastest growing economy in the world, the world's leading manufacturer. And so they never bothered to say, what is the economics of a China attack? But more important than that, and what this article talks about, is what are the logistics? Do you know that none of those eschatologists ever bothered to figure out how China could march 200 million men, could drive 200 million men, could transport 200 million men across the Euphrates River to Israel? I mean, yes, they have a small navy, a reasonably small navy, and yes, they have transport ships, but this particular attack by Iowa does not occur by way of a beachhead in the Mediterranean. They don't sail through the Suez Canal. They do not sail through the Straits of Gibraltar. They don't attack via the Western Sea. They cross the Euphrates. So to cross the Euphrates, they have to come a land route from China. But there was no way to do that. Not even remotely. You know the what is the highest mountain range in the world? Called the Himalayas.
Yeah, the Himalayas.
Yeah, the Himalayas. And where the Himalayas transition through western China and Pakistan, they're called the Hindu Kush. Like, for example, K2, which is the world's second tallest mountain, is in the Hindu Kush. In fact, my book, Tea with Terrorists, my first expose on Islam, much of the action takes place in the Hindu Kush. Well, that mountain range serves as an absolute blockade to having any sizable numbers of people make it from China to cross the Euphrates River and enter via a land route into Israel. Well, it was just reported in the Washington Post, something that has been ongoing but not covered by, of course, the intelligence of the United States, not by the media of the United States, but China has committed $46 billion to building the world's most difficult, most challenging roadway. Right through the Hindu Kush, right through these mountains, through the impoverished nation of Pakistan, all the way to its furthermost western border. When this roadway is completed in less than 10 years, it will be a thoroughfare for man and machine. It will bring China's war machine to Israel, crossing that border. And what's interesting, of course, is that the Islamic war, the Magog war, in all likelihood does not include, guess what country? Iran. When Yahweh lays out all the foes that are going to be part of the Magog war, Iran isn't one of them. Pakistan is really iffy. It's all of the countries of northern and eastern Africa. It's the countries like Turkey and those that have conquered Syria. And it's the countries of the Islamic Middle East that all participate in the great jihad against Israel. But now China, with its extraordinary pipeline and thus economic ties to Iran, is building a roadway through Pakistan that will lead it to Iran. And the Chinese, with the Iranians and the Pakistanis, will collectively attack Israel in the last days. And you might wonder why they would do so. Well, first of all, China, like Russia, needs to endear itself with the Iranians because of their economic ties. But also, there's only one way to galvanize the two sects of Islam, Sunni and Shia, and that is to contribute to the destruction of Israel. And so that is the likelihood. But for the very first time now, we have the means for this to happen. Glenn, were you aware that the Chinese were engaged in a $46 billion endeavor?
Yeah. Good morning, Scott. Good morning, Mr. Lindsay. How are you?
Yeah. You know, the Hal Lindsay is an interesting character. Hal Lindsay is the reason I became a Christian. He is certainly part of the reason I'm no longer a Christian.
Right.
I read Hal Lindsay's. I had, grown up going to a church but not buying into it. And it was Hal Lindsay's late great Planet Earth, much of which was untrue. But it spoke of things that that were true, and that not everything that he wrote was incorrect. For example, he never did figure out the Islamic connection, and he had Roche as Russia as opposed to Chief Prince of Meshach and Tubal. And so he made a lot of tactical extrapolation mistakes. And then I got to know him personally. He started a church in a gymnasium in a local school that my wife and I attended there for a while. I got to know him personally. Then I, as I began to write and read and learn, I was invited to prophecy conferences where we typically took a different view of things. But so you mentioned, Hal Lindsay and Hal was the
supposed to be an amillennialist.
Yeah, I know. But you see, I gave up on the Presbyterian Church largely because of the of my giving up, of course, just on Christianity. But beyond that, the Presbyterian Church has become one of the most anti-Semitic, one of the most anti-Israel institutions in America. And I know what Yahweh said about those who are opposed to his chosen land and chosen people. And I don't want to be accounted with those who have declared war, verbal war, economic war on Israel.
Right. And it's funny, as a as someone, if someone studies doctrine, it's kind of funny to watch the nervous alliance between evangelical, like Presbyterians or Anglicans or other amillennial groups with evangelicals who are dispensationalists, because their view of salvation history, of the timeline, is totally different. You know, so anyway.
Yeah. A dispensation, yeah. There are a lot of doctrines, a lot of doctrines in Christianity that are designed to get around the obvious that Yahweh has made promises to the descendants of the covenant he established with Abraham, and that there's only one covenant, that the covenant that he is going to renew with the descendants of Abraham, which would be the descendants of Jacob, which would be Israel. And so what they have said, without any testimony to validate their claim, and all testimony contrary to their claim, but you know, religion thrives in ignorance, is that all those promises to the descendants of the covenant with Abraham and with Israel have been miraculously transferred to them. And then all of the prophecies that don't mention them, that mention Israel, therefore apply magically to them.
Well, yeah, it's replacement theology, and then you have Paul talking about them being cut off and they grafted back in and all that.
Then you have the dispensationalism. It's just interesting how Christians convolute everything. You know, the dispensationalists, which they're different treatments of different people by different standards, different times. So a very capricious God that changes willy nilly.
Well, the reason I brought up Lindsay was because, you know, of course he talked about highway through the Himalayas even back then, but always made it sound as though this was imminent, this was not going to happen, it was existing. You know, there's always that false urgency. But like you said, he's wrong about a lot of things. You know, for example, like helicopters being the scorpions from the abyss or something like that.
You could talk about a highway through the Himalayas, and there once was a route. It was called the Silk Road. That was promoted by the Mongols. But the fact of the matter is that until just recently, there had been absolutely no attempt to build one. And now right. The incentives to build one, to a large degree, are the same as the incentives for Russia to form its economic alliance and military alliance with Iran and thus with Syria, is that the United States has so badly mishandled its relationship with Russia that it was compelled to work around the United States. And so the same thing is true with China. We are sailing our warships through Chinese waters to provoke China. And so by provoking China, by spying on China, by constantly harassing China, the Chinese have decided, well, then we will expand economically in directions that do not tie us to the United States. And so the place to build a road, not because there's value in Pakistan, there really isn't any value in Pakistan, but through Pakistan, China has the best opportunity to get to the rest of the Islamic Middle East and to garner a disproportionate amount of the wealth there.
While we simultaneously host three Chinese warships in Florida, talk about your mixed messages. You know, there are three Chinese warships docking, you know, in Florida. And so it's like hospitality on one hand, hostility on the other. Make up your mind.
Yeah, all I know from my past life as a manufacturer and importer is that, and a person engaged in retail, that the vast preponderance of the goods that you buy in American stores that are not food and sundries come from China. And that the China Navy is really a flotilla of many thousands of cargo vessels. And the weapons of this war are the product therein. And that America in this war is sending back cardboard and raw materials, and the Chinese are transforming the cardboard and raw materials into finished goods. And so we have become the third world nation. They have become the economic manufacturing engine of the world. And so this war has already been won. And it wasn't won with bullets and bombs, but with cargo ships. With one nation supplying cardboard and the other supplying televisions and telephones.
Right. And unfortunately, China is destroying its ecology in the process because they don't have a Clean Air Act or Clean Water Act or anything like that.
Yeah, they certainly have done a lot of that, but they've also made some interesting reforms in that regard, too. It's interesting, though, that the United States brought suit against the Chinese, forcing the Chinese to do the thing that does the most destruction to the Chinese the environment is the mining of rare earth elements. The Chinese have about an 80% share of the most important rare earth elements that are used in not only technological products, but are the literal backbone of militaries. And so they had an 80% share, and they said, listen, we're destroying our environment by mining these in the quantity that the world wants. We're just going to cut back our supply to the world by some 60% so we don't rape our land. Now, they could also be saying, well, why should we be supplying our someone who has directed their military against us with the very materials they need to produce weapons? But the United States sued China in court and said the economic need for these raw earth elements that you alone can supply outweighs your desire to protect your environment. And they won in the international court, saying that China, if they wanted to continue to be part of the world economic system, had to continue to destroy its environment to supply the United States military and spy apparatus with the rare earth elements it craved.
Rare earth mining could also have something to do with foreign policy in Africa, because Africa is also heavy on rare earth. But,
you know, the 20%, I mean, there's, you know, China controls 80% of the world's rare earths, and Russia has about 10 to 15%. The remaining 5% is in Africa. And the numbers may be slightly different. Russia, China may have 75%. It might be, you know, 10% for Russia, and then 10% is in Africa. But the Chinese, rather than spending their money, spending $1 trillion a year between the military and spying apparatus, the Chinese have been buying mines, huge tracts of land around the world, and they buy mines in places where the elements are found that that a modern manufacturing economy is based. And so the United States, you know, this this Pakistan comparison is really interesting. The United States, over the past decade, has invested $30 trillion in Pakistan. That above board. That's $30 trillion that is beyond the bribes that we pay to transport our war materials through Pakistan to fight the Pakistani Taliban in Afghanistan. $30 billion. And $30 billion is almost exclusively war material that we have given the Pakistani government. So we give the Pakistani government the weapons of war, weapons of mass destruction, while the Chinese are giving the Pakistanis roads.
Right.
Which one do you think is going to pay the greater dividend long term?
Oh, the roads, you say. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, hey, look at the, what empire, what do roads provide help with building empire, you know?
Right.
Romans built roads, the Chinese, whoever's building roads, you know.
Yes, if you look at the South China Sea, the Chinese are building islands to extract oil. And the United States is sailing warships that destroy, that consume oil and destroy.
Yeah.
We just have a very different approach.
And one overflight by the correct airplane would yield the same result as with the Donald Cook. So.
Yeah.
You know, that foolishness is, I don't think it's going to last very long.
Yeah.
But
I do think that that getting a country in the time that is required, you know, they'd have to begin now building this roadway to invest $46 billion so that they could participate in Armageddon. Now, they're not doing it because they want to participate in Armageddon. They don't even know about Armageddon, and that that it's predicted that 200 million men will cross the Euphrates River and attack Israel during this final battle known as the Hill of the Rendezvous. But nonetheless, they needed to do it for that prophecy to be true, and they're doing it. Now, speaking of cross purposes, you mentioned that we're hosting the Chinese Navy in a port in Florida while we are provoking the Chinese Navy by sailing through waters that they've asked us not to send warships through. The United States was embarrassed a couple of days ago. We were we've claimed that we're not going to have boots on the ground in Syria, that Syria is going to be surgical. We're going to do it from the air. That's how we're going to deal with the Islamic State. Well, the fact is that in Syria, we have participated in raids. Now, we haven't participated in raids to save the Christian girls and the Zoroastrian girls that have been kidnapped and sold as sex slaves. No, we haven't done that. We've engaged with the Peshmerga, which means to embrace death. The Kurds, a jihadist organization, to raid prisons to free Peshmerga jihadists. And we're launching our raids both from Iraq, where we have where there are more Russian generals than probably American, and also from Turkey. And we most of our bombings in Syria are taking place from Turkey. So here we have this video where an American is killed, where we are soldiers side by side, shoulder with shoulder with the Kurds in Syria. And guess what the Turks did yesterday? They bombed. these very same Kurdish militias. Now, we're having a conniption fit that the Russians are bombing the jihadists that Saudi Arabia and the United States are providing weapons to fight the Assad regime. And we're just saying that's just, oh, Russia being stupid and counterproductive. And yet we're on the ground with American troops, with the very people, the Turks, who are our allies in all of this, are bombing. So when are the Turks going to bomb and kill Americans?
Right. Well, the Turks are, it's also through Turkey that many of these refugees are being channeled into Europe. I mean, Turkey seems to be following policies that are going to make it the hub of a caliphate. You know, they want to infect the world and be the hub of the Islamic caliphate.
Exactly. And, you know, wow. Now, this is what, that's what Erdogan really wants. So anytime you find Erdogan in opposition to jihadists, he's only in opposition because he wants to be the great caliph himself and doesn't want anyone else to have that kind of opportunity. So, you know, this is the mess we find ourselves in. We are doing everything we can to start war. I mean, it's far worse than the conditions prior to World War I, where a single shot from a single pistol caused the whole world to engage in war because of the nations align either with or against one another. We have exactly the same thing now. What we've got is a more convoluted version of this, because we're supplying the warplanes, the Turkey and the bombs that Turkey is using to bomb the Kurds, and we're providing the weapons and the troops and the intelligence that are deploying these very same Kurds. I don't think there's ever been a time where any nation has supplied the weapons and the intelligence and the motivation to have groups that were at war with each other kill each other while that same nation allied with both sides.
Yeah,
typically in war, you pick one side or the other. The United States is picking both sides.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's this Hegelian dialectic thing: the best enemies money can buy, and funding both sides from above, and all that sort of thing. And it's going to blow up in their faces. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, in order for the Magog, you know, war to come to pass, I mean, we're going to, you know, we're looking at a 10 to 12 year time frame where Islam is certainly going to be on the rise and coalescing, you know, over time, over the next 10, 12 years. And then, you know, and then with the Chinese are, you know, also going to be, you talk about the role of the Chinese and building this highway and stuff, you know. We're, you can just, like, sit back and observe all this, you know. Meanwhile, people are, like, squawking, you know, prematurely about it. But this time is going to be what it takes for all these, you know, things to be put in place. And, you know, so we'll have to see the rise and coalescence of Islam, and then the role of Chinese being developed. I wanted to mention the logistics of feeding, hydrating, and, you know, transporting a 200 million army are quite daunting. Even if they marauded and pilfered through the land, they couldn't survive long. So, yeah, the logistics for that have to be put in place over a considerable period of time.
That's at a considerable cost. And since no one in China right now is planning an assault on Israel, nor planning to send its entire military through Pakistan into Israel, you know, you had to have a series of events that would motivate the Chinese to build an interstate, if you will, sufficient to move that many men and material. And you're talking about something really extraordinary here. The size of the tunnels, the size of the overpasses, the size of the bridges through extraordinarily rugged terrain. I mean, now China, $1 billion goes a long way in China because of the relative wages and the amount of work a person will do for the amount that they're paid. And so, you know, this is sort of like the United States spending, a $500 billion.
Right.
The United States wouldn't get this much done for $500 billion.
Oh, no. There's too much corruption. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm otherwise engaged here. This is why I'm so against people. We have so much doomsaying going on. You know, people squawking, oh, doom, doom. And it's like, well, no, because we know that things have to transpire over time in such a way that all this stage setting gets done for these events. And, you know,
yes.
I routinely have to, you know, try to, you know, tell people who have already shifted into Chicken Little mode, it's like, no, the whole world is not going to fly apart tomorrow. These things are going to transpire.
We're only 11 years away from the Magog War. And the Magog War doesn't begin until after Damascus is a heap of ruins the greater Syria falls. So you'd expect a massive war in Syria, isolating Damascus so that it's the last thing that falls. And you would expect that everything would be in place for it to fall within the next 11 years. And that the Magog, the Armageddon, the next war that in all likelihood involves China, you'd expect the logistics of that war to be ensuing as we speak, because it
follows
3.5 years later. More like 6 years later.
And the fact that this must occur because Yahweh has said it will negates the possibility of an asteroid, you know, a comet strike extinction level event. You know, people are out there talking about all manner of you know, flip the scenarios that cannot happen because relative stability has to remain, you know, to some degree.
We are going to have an asteroid strike. And you think now of China.
Not tomorrow.
Yeah, we're going to have some. It's going to be Friday the 13th in 2029 is when Apophis is going to hit. And even in that regard, it provides added motivation for China, because in all likelihood, based upon the scenario that is described, the United States and Europe cease to exist as a result of that strike. And the exchange, the nuclear part of the Magog War. And so China absolutely has to, for it to survive, it has to explore new markets, because it's going to lose its largest and second largest customer. And so now you've got a motivation, because if you look at the world today, the American empire is built by the military and by military bases and military sales for the express purpose of commerce. The Chinese are going to do the same thing.
Do you think any of these genius think tanks take the time to study Hebrew prophecy?
Yeah, you would think they would. You know, the world is so fascinated with Nostradamus and with other you know, the think tanks that are predicting what's going to happen, and they are wrong more often than they're right. And yet here you have the history of the world presented with great precision that has always been right, and that has more to say about this particular time than any other time in the last 6,000 years.
Yeah, their thinkers spend too much time getting tanked. Anyway, I gotta go.
Okay.
All right. Yeah,
thank you. But, you know, what's interesting here is that most think tanks focus on what's going to happen in world economics, what's going to happen in terms of the conflicts of the superpowers militarily. And so they're focused on economic forecasting between the United States, Europe, and China, and Russia. They're focused on military entanglements between the United States, Europe, Russia, and China. And they're focused on everything from global warming to extremism and the rise of these things. They're very finance-oriented, economics-oriented. Yahweh's not. While Yahweh despises the religious making merchandise of men and politicians making merchandise of men, and while he despises the wanton killing of militaries, and while he is opposed to politics and politicians who lie more often than they tell the truth, his focus is not on the United States. He gives us a warning. He condemns us. He exposes us. He tells us that we're responsible for much of the mess in the world. But his focus isn't the United States. It's not Russia. It's not China. He doesn't give two hoots that the Chinese are building oil islands. Doesn't care. Doesn't speak of South America. Doesn't care much about any of these things. He only cares about that which influences and interacts with Israel. Interesting today, the United Nations was condemning again the destruction of Palmyra as a war crime. It is interesting also today that the Islamic State took a slightly different tactic in blowing up the temple to the Lord, to Baal, in Palmyra. They took captives, three of them. So three people that they had captured, and they tied them to columns in for the temple to the Lord in Palmyra, and blew up the individuals along with the columns. It's kind of like saying, okay, so United Nations, what is it that you're interested in? Your God-forsaken temple to the Lord, or is it individuals, people? And it's also telling that the Islamic State created videos of fake beheadings that they knew, because of the way that they created them, would be played on American television. And that because these fake beheadings actually took the lives elsewhere, not during the beheading, of two Americans that should not have been there, that it was likely the United States would use it as a justification for declaring war on the Islamic State. And the Islamic State has gone from being irrelevant to being one of the formidable factors in the world today as a direct result of this. And you have to wonder, does in fact, the Islamic State produced these videos for the express purpose of continuing to draw attention to itself and therefore being a viable foe, because it wants to be attacked by the West. Makes it stronger, makes it more popular. Hello, Nick. It's been a long time since I've heard from you. How have you been?
Well, someone has to work for a living, though.
I understand that.
I'm good. As usual.
Good.
I can do better.
I'm glad to hear it. Do you have a question or do you have a comment as the world seems to be falling apart around us? I don't think I've heard from you since the United States declared war on the Islamic State, and since we found that the United States was complicit in creating the very enemy that is fighting.
I've been listening. I've been learning.
I'm glad.
I'm there, and I have more than just a question. I have a statement. I have a question.
Okay.
And I want to talk about it. First of all,
good.
I think that I didn't know that it's possible, but I think that your book, is actually have become a new Bible. Did you know that?
Oh, you're talking about Yada Yada and Intro to God?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't like the term Bible very much, but it's been a real important source, I think, for people around the world to know what God had to say.
But what I'm saying is the reason why I said that it has become a Bible, because people who are using it, using the same techniques as the religious folks do, in the...
Hey, what do you mean? They're using it the same technique, is there?
Well, how about to explain a little?
Okay, why don't you explain a little?
my, so, you know, Unpopular Truth, right? The group. So, five questions that I have asked before I got answered. And the first one was, did Noah build an altar? And Larry, where did you even come up with me saying that Noah built an altar on the ark while he was being saved? How? Where did you read I said it? Are you putting words in my mouth? I'm sorry. I mean, you could go on the Bereshit and see where did he build an altar? When did he build an altar? Why? I mean, but that's not the point. So
can I
the
speak
question
here?
Did he build an altar? Well, okay, we'll continue after
okay.
the break.
Yeah, you also need to understand what the purpose was of the of that raised platform. And why Noah was instructed and complied with the idea of bringing clean animals into the ark, and what the purpose, the relationship between the clean animals and that particular raised platform would have been.